This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the June 23rd edition of Invest Talk. Above average investing for the average investor is what we're all about. We're here to listen to your concerns, your ideas, field your questions about some of the financial options open to you, and maybe pass along some new ideas or expand your view of what's possible. You know, we all need the brush up on our skills to manage money. You need to brush up on your skills to manage your money. Even if you hire somebody else, you still need to know what they're doing. You have to understand it. A recent article in Investment News pointed up a conflict in what today's investor wants, what the investor wants. For instance, when markets, investors want safety, but on the other hand, they also want growth. They are diametrically opposed. It's very difficult to get safety and growth. Maybe not diametrically opposed, but very difficult. When markets are volatile, investors want advisors to do something to stabilize the swing in the value of their portfolios. Investors want an adequate pool of investment dollars in the future, but on the other hand, they want to enjoy consumption today. You want big investments in the future, but you want to spend all your money. So how are you going to get to those big investments? When the stock market is high, investors don't want bonds until the market corrects. Well, you buy bonds after the market corrects? You should be doing just the opposite. Investors want equity-like returns without volatility. Can't do that. Investors want to perform. This is in a survey. This is not something made up. This is what people want. Investors want to perform favorably against selected indexes while making steady increases in purchasing power. Well, that's possible. But you got to take the risk. You got to take the volatility. Now, these are conflicting desires, and the behavior they inspire often. What often happens because of these conflicting desires is disappointing returns and sometimes devastating returns. You're buying high, sell low. You want really high returns, but you don't want the risk. So how do you deal with it? How do you deal with this kind of thinking? And that's my job, really. That's part of my job. How do we respond to real life, the real threat potholes that are going to come by? They're coming, like 2000, 2008. These are big potholes sometimes. Like death and taxes, that potholes happen. So what do you do? How do you control that? And, you know, you can't necessarily control it, but you can hedge against it. And the job of the investment advisor, such as myself, is to teach my clients to expect volatility if you're expecting high growth. Expect less volatility if you want less growth but steadier income. You have to understand what you're asking for, what your goals are, how long you're going to invest, and ride through those potholes. It's not simple. It's hard to you as an investor. It's hard for you to sit there and watch your money go down when you want growth and you know it's going down. Well, how is it going to grow? I want growth, but it's going down because you're in a bear market or a big correction. Well, you have to live through those parts to get to the growth part. You can't be selling out at the bottom. You got to be buying when there's maximum pain. Buy more. Maximum pain. I'll give you an example. Just a tiny little example that we talked about on this show, calls after call, and it's Teva Pharmaceuticals. Not recommending it. I'm just using it as an example. It kept falling, right? Falling. And I started recommending it when people were calling, well, I like it around $30. And it kept falling. And my people would call, and I said, well, you need to buy more. Why? And why? It keeps falling. Well, because it's the deep value stock. It's not going anywhere. It's paying a really nice dividend. And you want to buy cheap. It's cheap. When are you going to buy it? When it's expensive? Now it has bounced in the last, since the beginning of June. It's now up to $32.61 after hitting, what, $29 a share? Okay, so I don't know if it's going to continue up, but you knew that it was devalued. You knew that it was not going out of business, and you knew it was cheap. The PE today is still 7. Forward PE is going to be less than that. So, you know, the lesson learned here is you want to buy things that are inexpensive, but people kept worrying about it's going down, it's going to continue down, I'm going to lose money. If you're not going to buy it cheap, then you wait till buy expensive, and that's how you're not going to make money in the market. Now, that is a value play. And you know I'm a deep value investor. I like value plus growth. But if you're a growth investor, you would never even consider Teva. Even though it's starting to grow now, you still probably wouldn't consider it. It's not part of your... Part of that kind of, it doesn't meet a lot of those indicators that you want to show that it's a growth stock. So maybe I can help you with your investing strategy. What kind of strategy do you have? Do you have one? What would your response be to a sudden sizable market downturn? What would you do? Let's talk about it. Our list line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time, so we're live right now. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Well, hi, guys. I had a question I was hoping you could answer. My wife recently changed positions. She now works for a hospital, and they have a 403B plan. And unfortunately, they only have one provider, which is Zalik. It's an insurance company. With her previous employer, she had Fidelity. And she currently has $140,000 in there that's fully vested. My question is, should I roll that over to a IRA within Fidelity, or am I better served, or is she better served because of compounding interest, to roll it into Zalik Insurance Company, the 403B, that she's going to be eligible for in the next couple weeks? Also, she has an appointment set up with one of the Zalik reps. And what are some key questions she should ask? I know things such as surrender periods and loaded funds and commission and how they're compensated, the financial advisor, how they're compensated. I know there's just some talking points I would like her to address with this individual. But what are some other questions that should be asked to the Zalik rep? Okay? Appreciate the information, and I love the podcast. Thank you.
Okay, when you move from one company to another company, many times you can roll your old 401k or 403b into the new 401k or 403b. That's very common. I don't recommend that usually. Usually I suggest you roll it into an IRA because you'll have a lot more choices. And many times it's less expensive because 401ks and 403bs, those things have fees. And, you know, the fees add up. And usually you can do better in an IRA with fees and costs. Plus, you can hire anybody you want or do it yourself, and you get unlimited choices of what you can invest in. So that would be my first thinking, is roll it into an IRA rather than into the new 403B. 403B, everybody, is the same as a 401K. There's also 457s. And it really, 401K is for private companies. Private for-profit companies. And then the 457s and 403Bs, they are for nonprofits or government entities. It's just different parts of the code that allows for the same types of counts for people. So anyways, what kind of questions? One question you want to ask is, what are my choices as far as investing vehicles? And maybe another one would be, what are the costs? What are the total costs to me, including you know, the cost of the 403B, your the management fee of your company, how much money do you take out of my, what percentage do you take out of my money to manage the whole 403B? And then is there any trading costs, any back-end costs, 12B1 costs, they call them 12B1, back-end loaded commissions on any of the mutual funds, and can I buy outside the existing mutual fund choices by setting up a brokerage link account? Is that possible? Those kinds of questions are what I would ask. 88% of advisors say they currently use or recommend ETFs. 88%. 1 in 2 plan to increase their use of ETFs over the next 12 months. Hello, ETFs. Goodbye, mutual funds. That's one of our talking points today. Also, indexes are managed. People think that they're not managed, but they are managed. Their management is rule-based, but they're not static. I want to talk about the Russell 1000, 2000, 3000 today. Also, is Bitcoin, what's the size of Bitcoin? I mean, we know that that's the internet money. How much money is it? How big is it? How much money is floating around? Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea about the scale? Now, well, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to give you some, I'm going to give you a relationships between Bitcoin and other kinds of investments and currencies and all kinds of things. Finally, you need to live within your means. I've been saying that forever and ever and ever and ever. So how can you do it? What are some of the steps you can take to achieve that? I'm going to give you some helpful hints to achieve or understand that you actually are living within your means or you're not. It's really simple. It's always been fairly simple to me. I've been keeping it very simple. That old KISS thing, keep it simple, as far as living within your means. So we're going to explore that a little bit at the end of the hour, hopefully. The market today was mixed. The Dow was down 2. The NASDAQ was up 29. And the S&P was up 4. So I would say it was mixed to up today. That would be how I would look at it. And the whole week was like that. It wasn't, you know, mixed to up. I would call that for the whole week. So that was the market. Nothing exciting happened this week. The Federal Reserve had a meeting. They raised the rates. But the market went ho-hum. Who cares? Yeah. So there wasn't anything really exciting out this week to push the market up or down. So let's go to Jay in Fremont. We'll talk to him. How you doing, Jay?
Hi, Steve. Steve, I'm fine. Thank you. Steve, I have a question on ticker KR. Mm-hmm. It's fallen down badly after Amazon bought Whole Foods. So I want to know if it is a good price to buy right now. Thank you.
Okay, KR is Kroger, everybody. And people on the West Coast don't know Kroger, but people on the East Coast and Midwest, they know who Kroger is because it's big. It's a $20 billion supermarket company. It operates 2,796 stores. They also have jewelry stores under Kroger's, Ralph's. Well, I guess we know Ralph's here on the West Coast. Quick, Shop, and other names. But they're a big grocery store chain. And yes, they went from $30, and in 2 days they were down to $21. Today at $22.60. That was when Amazon bought Whole Foods. And just to be clear, we owned Whole Foods when that happened, and we sold it the day that they made the offer to buy them. So we don't own any more. But everybody assumes that this big deal is going to be very good and be very competitive with Kroger and everything. And I think that assumption is pretty big assumption. I don't think so. I really, Jay, I think Kroger is probably a good buy right where it is. I do. Now, the PE range is 10 to 22, and the PE right now is 11, and they're going to make $1.98 next year, then $2.05 the year after. They've been growing at 4 and 5%. I don't see how that's going to change just because of Amazon buying Whole Foods. Amazon has been trying to get into the food business, but this is a pretty difficult, and they bought a a big company. It's a difficult sector. The profit margins are very skinny, and I know Amazon's used to that, but they never ran a store. They don't know anything about the food grocery business. Now, they do have some experience with home delivery and that, but the assumption that it's going to work, I think, is a big assumption. And I don't think it's going to hurt the other grocery stores that much at this point. This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. I'm glad you are investing this hour with me. I appreciate it. So let's hear your voice, your question, or anytime. Listener line number is 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Aaron in New York. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
I have a fun one for you today. So I'm looking at UVXY, and I listen to what you say, and it's a ultra-long 3X volatility index. And my thought for you is that if you shorted UVXY, it would be a no-brainer, it would be a no-brainer win. Because if you look at their chart from 2011 when they started, they've lost, money consistently since their inception because of the fees and the tracking errors and so on. So I wanted to call you and have you burst my bubble. Why won't this work?
It should work. I'm not bursting your bubble. This is a ProShares Ultra VIX short term. It's an exchange-traded fund seeking corresponds to twice the performance of the S&P 500 VIX short-term futures index. So if you short it, trying to track the VIX is very difficult. These ETFs that try to do it are pretty unsuccessful because the VIX, the real VIX, goes to a certain level and stops going down. But all the vehicles that track the VIX, they just keep falling. Yes, they'll bump up during volatile times, which is what they're supposed to do, but long term, they keep going down. So, your thinking is correct. You might want to wait for it to spike a day or two and then short it those days, because it does that every so often. But it should work.
What would keep you from just shorting it long term forever and just keep on making money that way? I feel like there's something I'm missing here.
Yeah, one of these days when we go into a bear market, it won't work. It'll do just the opposite. So you'll really get hurt, especially if it's a leverage like this one is, 2x. But until that happens, because we've been in a long-term bull market phase, right, since 2009. Very little downturns. The worst downturn we had was 19% in the summer of 2011. So this has been consistently down. Therefore, if you short it, your short will consistently go up in value. But the next recession, this will really you'll lose a lot of money because it will be very violent on the upside. You know what I'm saying?
Got it. So something you could do with a very small portion of your portfolio.
Exactly. It's something to be fun with. Aaron, you can play with it. Just don't play with a lot of money. Okay?
Completely understood. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate the call. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, and happy Friday, Steve.
Thank you.
All right. So my question is to previous question of yours, that what will be my strategy if the market goes down?
Okay.
So I just want to bounce off my idea that what I've done, see if you give a alternative or some critique on that.
Okay.
So basically most of my, so far this year, I have about 6-7% I already made on the market.
Okay.
Now what I did was I left most of my money in international funds, and from the U.S. market, what I did is I moved into cash. I plan on investing this cash in next 6 months on a gradual, very disciplined manner. What do you think, Will? Is this a good strategy or there is some better alternative that I should consider?
No, I think it's a good strategy. How much cash do you have on a percentage basis? How much of your whole portfolio do you have in cash, BJ?
Right now it's close to 45-50%.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy. That's probably a bit more cash than I would feel comfortable with, But I think your dollar cost averaging back into the market is probably the best way to do it. And if you'd have a correction or a pretty good downstroke, I'd speed it up during that correction, more money into the market.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, that if there are opportunities on the way, there are bad days, I will go a little bit more aggressively. Otherwise, a normal way of getting back in the market.
I think that's a good strategy to be in. I do.
Thank you.
Thanks, BJ. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Sathy in Sunnyvale. Sate, how you doing?
Hi, Stu. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question about Apple. You know, I've been thinking about buying it, but I think I'm waiting for it to go down to about 120 or so. What do you think? What's your buy point for Apple?
Well, it would be nice if you could get it at 120, and it might go there. It's at 146, everybody, right now. So that's about 12, 13% more down. And that would be an ideal, like 115 to 120 would be the ideal place for it to go. But I have a feeling that you might get it, it might have to be about 130, you know, if we get a weakness. Because I just think that, you know, we're coming into the end of the year. This is probably going to continue to rise, I think. So if you get it that low, great. But you might not get it that low. Okay, Sati?
Do you see a bounce in short term?
No. I think we're going to see further weakness until the fall. I do. Appreciate the call, Sati. Thank you for the call. Do you know how much risk you're taking right now with your retirement portfolio? Take the first step to find out. Why not take the test? It's free. It's our free risk analysis test. It's a few questions and you get a score. It's there for you on investtalk.com.
Our podcast continues next. First, a number from KPP Financial. It's reason number 2 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Reducing risk is the number one priority for everyone these days. In a low interest rate environment, you crave those great returns that stocks can give, but you're afraid of the risk. So what's the formula? Well, Steve can help you come up with an answer that fits your life situation. And there's never any charge for a complete portfolio checkup for our InvestTalk listeners, and no obligation of any kind either. To schedule your 1 hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. Or if you'd rather, call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's continue with the podcast. InvestTalk continues, and we thank you for being with us today. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready to answer any money question right now. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, ETFs, exchange-traded funds, those are those, they trade like stocks. They're like little bundles of stocks that could be tracking an index or just a certain sector. And they've been very, very popular, very, very popular over the years. And they are competing for money against mutual funds. So a lot of the mutual fund families are offering ETFs. One reason is they're usually less expensive. But most ETFs, 99/9 of them, are not managed by a manager. They just follow or track an index or subsection or sector of an index or whatever. So how popular are they? Well, in 2006, 40% of the money managers, 40% of the, at least the ones that were surveyed, indicated that they recommended ETFs to their clients, 40%. And now from 2006, it's done nothing but grow. And today, it's 88% of money managers, investment advisors, recommend to their clients to buy ETFs. Huge growth. Well, as I said, the reason being is there's several reasons. Lower cost is the number one. But they also are pretty tax efficient. In other words, if you hold on to the ETFs, they're pretty tax, they're very flexible too. So I kind of like them. We have a few in our managed account. One thing I do really like about them is you can own a short ETF in an IRA. So you can short the indexes or subsection of the index in an IRA with ETFs because you buy the ETF and inside it, it shorts. And that's a little wrinkle in the law that allows you to short inside an IRA because you cannot short directly with an IRA. You can't short a stock in an IRA or 401k or any of those retirement accounts. But you can buy a fund ETF that shorts. I don't understand why they didn't see that little loophole, but they didn't. So let's get back to answering our 24-hour listener line calls. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number.
Hello, Steve. This is Julian from Barcelona, Spain. So I have a question regarding AB InBev, the owner of Budweiser Beer. And I'm looking to buy long-term. I like the dividend very much. But my problem is that I don't really know how to analyze this company after the acquisition of SAB Miller last year for about $100 billion dollars. Because after the acquisition, the debt is obviously huge. And the net income from 2016 was pretty bad, I think, because of that acquisition. So I don't know if it's a good time to buy now or if I should wait. So I would appreciate your feedback and also maybe some entry point. Thank you for the show. I really love it. And I look forward to your answer. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bud, B-U-D is a symbol. Anheuser-Busch InBev. And remember, they combined. He mentioned that it was a big, huge combination of two big companies. And whenever that happens, for everybody out there, whenever that happens, it's a very difficult combination to make. When a big company buys and swallows a small company, it's much easier to absorb. When you have two companies of equal size combining, you have two different cultures. It's much more a difficult process. And even is more difficult if they have different businesses and competition within their businesses. But this both these were, alcohol kind of companies. So I don't think it was a bad deal. Now, they didn't lose money. Let me rephrase that. They made much less money in 2016, $2.83 a share, after making $5.20 the year before. And a lot of that was probably costs and different things that they had to go through to make this deal work and pay for. Now, 2017, they're going to make $4.23, 2018, $4.89. So, and it's a $113 stock. So it's a little bit like a 21, 22 PE looking forward. And that's not unreasonable based on its five-year range of 16 to 46. It's still high. It's still a little expensive. And remember, it's a $185 billion company. It's huge, a mongoloid. Now, if you're looking at a chart, this would be the area that you would want to be a buyer. Right around $113, based on a chart. It's higher highs and higher lows ever since the beginning of the year, which was about $100 a share. Now it's $113. Not going to be great dynamic growth. It's too big. But it does pay a 2.7% dividend. This would be a good price to buy it at. I still think it's a little expensive. Personally, I might wait. It got up to $121, $122 and then fall down to $113, but it's now finding support right at this $113 level. Personally, I would want to wait for a pullback in the overall market to see what it did to this company and buy it on that weakness if I could. But you just never know. It might be the lowest it's going to go. I don't know. It's a decent, on a chart basis, this is where you would buy it. On a value basis, no, you would wait. Nick and Hayward, how you doing, Nick?
Yeah, fine, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. Steve, I've been buying, I bought some Costco today.
Uh-huh.
Because it's been coming down, and I think it's a good company.
Yes.
What do you think? Should I buy a little more if it comes down more?
It depends on how much you bought on your overall portfolio. But yeah, if you don't have a lot of it already, more than like say 5% in your portfolio, You could buy more.
No, I don't.
Okay, this is Costco, everybody. And if you don't know who Costco is, I don't know where you live, but not in the United States. Operates 715 wholesale membership stores in Puerto Rico, Canada, Mexico, Australia, Spain, Japan. And they're growing their sales about 3 to 10% every quarter. They're a $68 billion company. Their earnings are very steady, growing between 8 and 10% every year. So you want to buy it when there's weakness. And the weakness is not caused by Costco, right? I mean, Nick, the weakness is because of Amazon buying Whole Foods. What's that got to do with Costco? That's not going to hurt Costco, just like I don't think it'll hurt Kroger. I just think everybody's putting way too much stress on that. Now, that might be the excuse that people are using here, Nick, because Costco was pretty expensive. I mean, compared to its earnings. I mean, it's a $157 stock. It's going to make $6.41 next year. So that's what, 21, 22 P.E. So even where it is, after it's fallen from 180 all the way down to 157, it's still not cheap. It's just not overly expensive anymore. So I would, Nick, I would wait a few days. You want to see it go sideways before I buy more.
Okay.
Wait for a few days of moving sideways. It's going to stop falling because it's still falling right now. It's going to stop falling.
Right.
It will. And it might stop right where it is because it's right at the 200-day moving average. But I do think it's a much better buy. If you, this is the opportunity to buy if you wanted to get into Costco. It's given you the opportunity to do so. And I think you might be a little early, Nick, but I don't think it's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
Okay?
I never had Costco, so I think it's a good entry point right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And you could be totally correct there. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. Let's go to Bill in Fremont. How you doing, Bill?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Sure. The reason I'm calling is I'm really a big amateur at investing. I've never invested one dime in the stock market.
Okay.
And I didn't know. I wanted to open up a broker account. I don't know. How do you trust a broker if you're going to send your money? If you're going to, how do you know it's a legitimate broker firm?
Okay. You make sure that they're You make sure that they're federally insured. Okay, you know, you've heard of SIPC, the insurance at a bank. Okay.
Okay.
So the brokerage firms have the same kind of insurance, SIPC.
Oh, I see insurance. Okay.
So therefore, you know they can't steal your money, or if they go under, you still get your money back. Okay.
Okay, what's it called again, the insurance?
SIPC.
SICP, okay.
SIP is in Paul, C is in cat. P is in Paul, C is in cat.
I got you. I'm sorry.
No problem. So almost all the brokerage you've heard of have SIPC, okay, like E-Trade and Scottrade. And, you know, if you go to the mutual fund family like Vanguard, all of those people, you go to Goldman Sachs, every one of them are SIPC insured, SIPC insured. And that amount is up to $500,000. Per account.
Gotcha. I'm not going to invest a lot. Okay.
Okay.
I have another question. I'm an amateur. I never invested a dime.
Sure.
Should I be getting into the markets right now, being I'm so new with this? I know they're not. I could see the markets are really inflated.
If I were you and you've never experienced the market, I would watch it until it goes down sharply.
Okay.
When it does go down sharply, Bill, if I can teach you one thing, buy when everybody else is selling. When everybody else is worried, gets out, you buy. You'll make money if you do that.
Okay.
When everybody else is saying, buy the market, it's great, it's going up, you can't lose. When you hear that, sell. That's all. Okay.
Sounds like a Warren Buffett kind of theology there, because I've heard him say that several times.
He's been doing it for years. The problem with that, Bill, is when is everybody else buying, and when do you know it's at its maximum? You don't. No one does.
Okay.
There's an also old saying, buy when there's blood on the streets. You know where that came from? The Great Depression, when brokers jumped out of the windows, killed themselves.
Gotcha.
Blood on the street. Okay.
So right now is not a good time then. Would you say it's not a good time for an amateur?
I would say now is not a great time to invest. But no one can tell you the top and no one can tell you the bottom. I can tell you long term, I think the market is the best place to be. But I would wait for a correction if I were you.
Okay, I'll do that then. I'll wait for a little bit. I was really, really actually considering waiting for a while. I mean, I don't know a lot about the markets, but I do know enough that it's really at a high end right now. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I mean, the way things are going right now. So
yeah, we've had a really good run.
Very much.
And it's a good time to wait. Bill, appreciate the call, and good luck. Call me if you want to have any other questions. Okay, time for Best Talk 101, baby. Everybody, baby. Show me the money. A company's statements are a primary source of information. There are four main financial statements, right? Four main financial statements. Number one, balance sheet. Number two, income statement. Number three, cash flow statement. Number four, statement of shareholders' equity. This is the balance sheet, the company's primary source of information to you and to themselves. These balance sheets show the company what a company owns and what it owes at a fixed point in time. Income statements show how much money a company made and spent over a period of time. Cash flow statements show the exchange of money between a company and the outside world over a specific period of time. The fourth financial statement, called a statement of shareholders' equity, that shows changes in the interests of the company's shareholders over time. How the value of the company go up. And there's no one financial statement tells you the whole story. They don't. But you put them together, and they provide a pretty good picture, a useful source of information. It's not rocket science, but you do have to know things. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions of this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in now, 888-99-CHART. Or make it a personal note that will come directly to me. You can send me an email. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
To catch up on breaking financial news and enjoy in-depth articles that can help you find your way through today's challenging money marketplace, visit our InvestTalk Insiders Information Carousel. Click on the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com and then InvestTalk Insider.
Hi, Steve. This is Lee. Just asking about MRO, Marathon Oil. I'd like to know whether I should sell or buy right now. I've taken a pretty big hit. Just let me know what you think. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Marathon Oil Corporation out of Houston engaged in oil and gas exploration, production, oil sands mining, and integrated gas services worldwide. Now, remember, oil sands are pretty expensive. And they lost money for the last 3 years. They're going to lose money this year, and they'll make money next year, but only 4 cents a share, 4 cents, and it's $11 stock. It's not a very good investment at this point. Now, it's fallen down hard. It looks like it might go down. Remember, it's $11.53. It broke support this year for 2017, broke below. I'm not really keen on this company. They don't have a lot of debt, but the whole oil sphere, all the oil companies are going to have to get used to lower oil prices, and they're going to have to survive with lower oil prices, therefore lower profits. And the ones that will survive the best, of course, will be the big companies. And Marathon Oil is not tiny. It's a $9.8 billion company. But frankly, if you've written it down so far from, because it, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was at $18, $18.50, and today it's $11.53. You know, I don't like it. I'd probably sell it and go look for something that's better. If I want to be in the oil sphere, there's a lot of better oil 888-99-CHART. You're listening to InvestTalk, everybody. We'd love to hear from you before the hour's up. 888-992-4278.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Listen every day. Learn lots. I've been following a stock this year. It's been doing really good, and it's showing a profit already. FN D. What do you guys think about it? Small company, kind of like a Home Depot type, it seems, and a lot of expansion going on, and looks like it's going to become a really good stock and make a lot of money in the future. Look forward to hearing your thoughts upon it. Thank you.
Okay, this is Floor and Decor Holdings, FND, operates 72 warehouse format stores across 17 states, averaging approximately 72,000 square feet. And I would say, no, it's too expensive. You don't buy it now. It just came out on IPO in May. Remember, you don't buy IPOs. You got to wait at least 6 months because insiders have to hold on to the stock, and then they start selling after 6 months. Most IPOs will sell below their IPO price after 6 months. This company came out of IPO at $21, and today it's $41.51, so doubled, 100% return. Long term, it could continue to grow, but right now it's way too expensive. It's only going to make 71 cents next year. Now, that's pretty good because it's 57 cents this year, 46 cents last year. In other words, it's made money for year after year, and it's grown very fast, as you pointed out. 30%, 25, 30, sometimes 40% sales growth. All those are great numbers. But it also has 288% debt to its equity. Return to equity is very high at 19. So it's a very good company. Don't misunderstand me. It's just gotten way too expensive. Way too expensive. You want to wait. Wait till at least that six-month period. Wait for it to come back down to earth. And then pick it up. Symbol is FND, everybody. FND. Now, you know, indexes are, you know, everybody says buy an index, you buy and hold shares of stocks inside. The S&P 500 has 500 stocks, which is 80% of the market. Then the Dow has 30 stocks, the Dow Industrials. And there's another index company, Russell 1000, Russell 2000, Russell 3000. And every year, the Russells rebalance their indexes. But I want you to realize that all indexes are not stagnant. Companies come and go inside the indexes. Come and go. So, for in the Russell 2000, the Russell 1000, 2000, 3000, those are three separate indexes, they change those every year. And they adjust them based on what's happening with the market. Because, you know, the Russell 1,000 is a different segment of the market than the Russell 2,000, and then the Russell 3,000 is like most of the market. But for instance, in the Russell 3,000, 200 companies will be added this year. 200 companies. The Russell 1,000 doesn't represent the market, it represents a segment. It's down 15% this year so far, down 15%. So you got to understand what's inside these indexes and how they change. I don't think that the indexes are just stagnant with the same companies year after year after year. That's not how they work. They will change. If the companies get too weak, like in even the Dow 30, there's only 30 companies. If the companies get too weak or you know, that they drop out and they'll add somebody else in. So most of the indexes are adding stronger companies and dropping the weaker companies. It's not fast. It's not happening every few weeks or months, but it happens. So just make sure you understand that the indexes are not stagnant. That's all the real point I want to make here. Okay? Now, is Bitcoin significant? Bitcoin, the finance money? Well, maybe we'll have to get to that another day. But it's very insignificant. Super insignificant as far as size to almost anything you want to compare it with. Time's up for the hour, everybody. Before we go, a reminder, we have the date set for July checkups. I will be paying you a visit in the San Jose area in July on the 18th. 18th of July. Or you can meet via Skype or the phone from anywhere, anytime. Just reserve your hour for an individual portfolio review. Just go to investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today. And let's meet up again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.